Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $20 on the Steel MS-162 or MS-170 chainsaw. Real Steel. Offer valid through June 30th, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
Gates and ready to go. Hot Mike with Hutton Withrow underway. The Tuesday edition is here. Got a big show today. They're always big, Jeff.
All of them are huge.
Draft week is here. It's going to be a huge week for that, too. We've got the live show coming up on Thursday evening. Looking forward to it.
Huge.
Clay will be ready to go with us that evening as well.
We'll be ready. We can't speak for Clay.
No, he'll be ready.
He'll be there. I don't know that he'll be ready. But he'll be there.
He's always ready.
If you just watched Outkick the Show with Clay Travis that just ended about 4 minutes ago,
it's awesome.
Then you'll know that he was ready for that show. I just don't want to look. I like to be honest with the audience, right? I want to let you behind the curtain and be completely transparent and honest. I can tell you from experience that Hutton and I will be ready.
Yes.
I think Clay will be ready, but I can't speak for Clay. Clay joins Outkick Hot Mike every week, and I'll ask him, "Are you ready for this draft party?" And we'll find out, and you can hear it from Clay's mouth whether or not he's going to be ready, but I don't want to lie to the audience and guarantee that he's ready just in case he's not ready.
Okay.
On Thursday night. The hope is that Clay's ready. I guarantee you, Hutton and I will be ready, and we may have a revolving door of cast members throughout the night, depending on who shows up at the party.
Yeah, that's right. And again, that's coming up Thursday, the draft watch party with Outkick. 8 p.m. Eastern is when we go on the clock, and looking forward to it. We'll go for as long as you guys want to chat with us in the YouTube chat. We'll be live there, plus live at outkick.com and more.
So my idea was, and I've been pushing this throughout, and it's been kind of met with silence, was I want to get a diehard fan of all 32 teams in attendance, like throw it out on social media and see who's local and get someone there and get them really liquored up.
Okay.
Get them really drunk, and then after the pick is made, we get the honest drunk fan reaction of every pick that's made. But I think there's some, and full disclosure here, we're the talent on air, so we don't care about things like negligence or if someone goes on air and says something crazy. We're not the ones that have to clean that up. But I heard that there's some fear of cursing. Of cussing of the fans on there.
Really?
I'm thinking, have you watched Dan Dockich? Have you watched his show? Because I specifically tuned in to watch him eviscerate Greg Doyle last week, and I loved every damn minute of it. And I'm telling you right now, there were words in there that would fall under George Carlin's words you're not supposed to say on a normal broadcast. This is not a normal broadcast. So I don't see any risk in bringing on a random drunk fan for a minute. I mean, Davey's a big guy. He can wrestle the headset from the person or get them out of the seat if needed, if they're being too unruly, right?
I mean, I would guess, but what would be too unruly? Would someone attacking Clay?
I don't know, but I mean, if someone
they would
just
be attacking me because they think I'm Clay.
I mean, here's what's going to happen. Someone's going to have, four shots of moonshine and a couple of draft beers, and they're going to sit down and they're just going to say LFG over and over, but they're going to say the full thing because they're going to be excited about the pick. And I find that to be entertaining.
They could start chanting it behind us, though.
They could. I mean, a lot of things could happen.
Yeah, but I'm saying that we wouldn't have any control over that.
I live for the action, right? I want the heat.
Chad's in the middle of the action.
I want to be surrounded by people that I don't quite know what's going to happen. When someone walks up to this door right over here and waves in, I wave back because I want it. I want the drama.
I wish I could see
it. I want wild things happening around us all the time. I don't want control. I'll break this window out right now, Hutton. I will break it out. And on a Friday, we'll hear Garth Brooks and Shania Twain and everything else throughout the show.
Don't get us flagged.
That's how
Friends
serious
are places I get. Man, I feel like a woman.
No, you just got us flagged. You just said the lyrics.
Yeah.
I think saying the artist's name doesn't get us flagged.
Man, I feel like a woman gets us flagged.
Here's the deal. Flash it down there one more time. Come to the draft party or watch the draft party Thursday night. It is going to be one hell of a time. I can guarantee Jonathan Hutton and Chad Withrow will be ready
here
to go. Davey Hudson's going to be a part of it at times as well. He'll be ready to go. Our great production crew, they're going to be ready to go. I can't guarantee a thing about Clay Travis. We'll ask him when he joins the show if he's going to be ready or not. Hopefully he will be.
John McClain will be ready.
Oh, of course.
He will be on the show later today. We're looking forward to talking with the man in black, John McClain, get his take on all the NFL draft rumors. The New York Giants rumored to be on the move, moving up. I think they're making the wrong choice based on general manager and coach and where they are right now in the timeline of needing to win and do more than what they did a year and a half ago. And also, friend of the show and the director of the Reese's Senior Bowl, Jim Nagy, on with us. Guess who he played a round of golf with recently?
Michael Jordan.
Drake May.
Ooh, that'll be good.
Yeah. And among others that were in the attendance and on the in the foursome, I believe.
But, what if I just Drake May was there? Asked questions about Drake May's golf game? So on the 11th
he's
hole,
apparently really good.
He had a chip shot is what I heard. And how was that approach shot?
Yeah, apparently very good.
Yeah, he's good at everything.
Yes. Don Staley, who led the South Carolina Gamecocks to an undefeated season and won, what, her third national championship, I believe, as head coach at South Carolina. Gail King interviewed Staley, I believe this was a couple of weeks ago on CBS, and where she said that we're all cheering for Iowa, of course. This is Steven Jackson, former NBA player, ripping Don Staley, or excuse me, ripping Gail King for those comments whenever she was interviewing Don Staley and said that about Caitlin Clark.
So, Gail King's supposed to be somebody that's big in the journalism space, right? And I don't consider her black media. Y'all give her all these passes because she's a Oprah friend. I don't know who friend she is. I don't do nothing for nobody. But you cannot demean Dawn Staley like that. You talking to her about winning the championship, about going undefeated, and you have the nerve to get on there and say, well, we was rooting for Caitlin Clark and you broke everybody's hearts. Who is we? Who is we? All the black people I know was rooting for Dawn Staley. We all fans of Caitlin Clark, but the way you put it, is trash. Yeah, I'm glad it's a new day in the media space. You know what I'm saying? Because you say you so intelligent, you don't even say stuff like that to somebody on the interview. You just demeaned her and made it about Caitlin Clark. That's trash. It's super trash.
I guess the entire broadcast crew that was sitting up at the table for the analysts that have been every table, every desk has way too many analysts on set. Don Staley was praising, them for, the black women that were on set.
Yeah.
They were also not rooting for Caitlin Clark, but they were certainly covering Caitlin Clark and glowing about Caitlin Clark. How could you not? And Chad, the nation is watching Caitlin Clark. That's the whole point of why it's even a story to begin with, why we're talking about the women's basketball tournament, not just because it's the national championship game, but everyone's tuned in to watch Caitlin Clark go back to the title and win.
I'd love to get Steven Jackson's ranking of black media members, since he knows the criteria that what makes someone black media versus just media, because he says in there, you guys want to say Gail King's black media. I'm stripping her of her credentials now because she was rooting for Caitlin Clark. Here's what I think about Gail King. I don't think she knows a damn thing about sports. And I think she probably misspoke when she's saying, I was rooting for Caitlin Clark. Everyone was watching Caitlin Clark, and there were a ton of people rooting for Caitlin Clark in Iowa. And Don Staley in South Carolina ruined that for those people that were rooting for Caitlin Clark in Iowa. That was the presentation that you should have made in saying that. It was trash to deliver it that way when you got the national championship winning coach there and you're in the media.
That's not demeaning.
And you're telling, it's not demeaning, but it is trash to present something by saying, boy, I was rooting for Caitlin Clark in Iowa and I'm really upset, that you guys won. I haven't seen the interview, first off. Full disclosure, I've not seen what Gail King asked her. I've not watched Gail King with Don Staley yet at all, but I think when you get people that know nothing about sports, that are interviewing sports figures, a lot of times they say stupid stuff. I think this was it's not demeaning. It's not Greg Doyle bad with his question to Caitlin Clark or anything like that. That was demeaning and stupid.
But
this wasn't that bad. It's just, it's sort of a fumbled, poorly chosen group of words and a description to show what she was trying to ask.
Just because you don't know anything about sports doesn't mean you can't ask an intelligent question. There were a lot of people that probably didn't know very much about sports in general that were tuned in to either watch Caitlin Clark or tuned in to the NFL because Taylor Swift was watching and they were rooting for Travis Kelce, right? So the nation is tuned in by and large if you're watching that game because Caitlin Clark's on TV. Now, we'll see if that translates. By the way, that's also because of we watched the WNBA draft to watch that coverage, too. I'm saying you don't have to be just straight down the line sports on the path to say, you know, we're all rooting for Caitlin Clark. I mean, what does we mean? We could mean those on the desk. I don't know. Like you're saying, you got to see what it's in context.
Yeah, I mean, I was rooting for Caitlin Clark because she hadn't won a national title. Staley has won multiple national titles, and I wanted to see her win a national title, and I love watching her play more than any one player on South Carolina's team. That doesn't mean that South Carolina wasn't a great story also going for an undefeated season, and they were able to capture that. I didn't lose sleep over South Carolina winning the national title, but Steven Jackson acknowledges a truth that so many people are unwilling to say, and that is black people wanted South Carolina to win. He says it right there. Every black person I know is rooting for Dawn Staley in South Carolina to beat the white girl, even though we appreciate how good Caitlin Clark is. And he says that in there. That's fine. We talk so much about representation. I've said this throughout. Most every white person I know rooted for Caitlin Clark. The ones who didn't are typically people who are virtue signaling, trying to show how progressive they are, and talking about celebrating everything Dawn Staley does, including saying she wants men to play against women in college basketball, like my college football media buddy did last week in a message to me that he stood up and applauded when she answered the out-kick question that way. Those are people virtue signaling, trying to show how progressive they are. Pretty much everyone else, it was divided down racial lines in a lot of ways in terms of rooting interest.
But not for Gail King, apparently.
Doesn't mean that black people and white people can't get along, right? Doesn't mean that people were outraged because one team won or the other. Doesn't mean that because you rooted for Caitlin Clark, you can't understand greatness in South Carolina women's basketball and how awesome of a coach Dawn Staley is. Doesn't mean that if you're Steven Jackson, and he says it right there, that if you are a black person that rooted for South Carolina, like him and a lot of his friends, as he admitted, doesn't mean you can't appreciate and respect Caitlin Clark, like he said, also. But at least he admitted it.
Well, he's saying
not that a lot of people are you know.
But isn't he saying that whenever Gail King says we, quote unquote, we, that she's saying he's insinuating black people? Isn't he? We're all rooting for Caitlin Clark.
I think he's kind of getting into the lines.
Don't demean her that way.
Yeah, I think.
Isn't that what he's leaning towards? Is what he's saying.
I would need to hear the Gail King clip.
Steven Jackson wants Gail King to be drafted in the Dave Chappelle racial draft by white people, is basically what he's saying here.
Well, yes. And he's saying, what do you mean we? Like, who are you representing when you say we? Because he's taking the side of, and he says it right there, he is representing black people writ large.
Right.
That every black person I know was rooting for South Carolina. So what do you mean you were or we were rooting for Caitlin Clark, and he took issue with that. Yeah, she said, I've got the quote here. This is from the Fox News story. Quote, we were all cheering for Iowa, of course, and Caitlin Clark.
Yeah, that's the quote I read earlier.
Was the quote. So he's saying, who do you mean we? And I get that. That's a poorly worded way of saying that. You could say everyone is watching Caitlin Clark. A ton of people were rooting for Caitlin Clark to win it all and break through, and you played spoiler to that. What did that feel like to accomplish that? I just worded a question better with zero preparation, and I said it as if Dawn Staley's right here. I can do that because I know sports, and I've been in sports media for a long time. Gail King doesn't know a damn thing about sports, and it shows when she interviews a sports figure. So if you want better sports questions, then ask a sports person to talk sports and ask the questions.
You're saying put Nate Burleson up there.
Right.
Chad, answering questions. Okay. that goes
yeah,
into
Nate
my...
Burleson's on that show.
Yeah,
man.
Of course. Yeah.
Good job. Good dude. I have fun at him at the Super Bowl every year. We talk to him.
Chad, I'm trying to listen to my head instead of my sports fan heart here, okay?
Okay.
I'm half joking on one, dead serious on the other. The football fan in me, though, makes it very difficult for my just my rational brain to overlook these recent comments from Jaden Daniels and Bo Nix. I'm half joking here on Jaden Daniels, but let me set this up. First off, Jaden Daniels is draftable, okay? I'm not saying I'm taking him off the board. Bo Nix, I'll tell you why I will in a minute. So he's on the Nightcap show, the podcast, with Shannon Sharp and Chad Johnson. And they're chatting live, this was Sunday night, about a variety of different things. And I actually enjoy some of the off-the-wall questions that they'll ask about the behind-the-scenes preparation or whatever it might be, the mindset of an athlete. And here is Chad Johnson asking about the diet of the quarterback who was known for, you know, a very specific meal plan, tongue-in-cheek, prior to games at LSU.
And you had an exceptional season last year. Now, from my understanding, you played so well due to your nutrition and what you ate before games.
Yeah.
Pre-game meal was an omelet and two waffles. Mm-hmm.
Two of them.
Now, once you get to the NFL, will you change your routine as far as nutrition is concerned? You're gonna stay true to yourself.
Hey, I'm in between, man. I'm true to myself. Like I can get away with a little bit. You know, I eat fast food still to the day, Wendy.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. That's why you're gonna be successful at the next level. Unc, you heard that? You heard him?
I still eat fast food, man.
Let's go, man.
Well, I'm sure
talk about.
But have you talked to any teams and have your trainer said, Jay, we probably need to put about 10, 15 pounds on you? Not right now, but through the process over the
for
next
sure.
year or so.
Yeah. Most definitely. Like teams I talked to, it was like what I played last year, I was like around like 205. So there was like, you know, we just gonna put on weight progressively, but we ain't gonna overload you. So, you know, right. your play start to digress.
So I don't need this guy to be TB12, okay?
Avocado ice cream.
But I don't necessarily want him to go in with the CJ2K diet. Chris Johnson would eat nothing but gummy bears and just junk food. And then he'd go out and rush. He did a 2,000-yard season doing that.
Had a hell of a career doing that.
Yeah, no doubt. But I don't think not everybody can be on the Donald Trump White House diet and actually pull it off. And I don't want my quarterback doing that either. Now, he's got to put on some weight. He said there, again, I'm not trying to overemphasize this, but it leads into my other quarterback, Chad, Bo Nix. Bo Nix, who has a lineage of family members, his grandfather, his father, both at Auburn. He follows in their footsteps. Of course, he transfers to Oregon. And when you hear this, think about the scrutiny he may face and will face as a quarterback in the NFL. And here is Bo Nix on Ryan Russillo's podcast discussing playing in the SEC compared to the Pac-12 and, well, the mentality and the mental toughness, maybe the thick skin that it took to play in the SEC and how much he preferred playing in the Pac-12.
What was the biggest difference between being a starter at an SEC school and a starter out West?
In a sense, the hostility and the maybe the unhealthy pressure that is added to, you know, 18 to 22-year-olds by, you know, outside noise and fans. Like, it's almost like an unhealthy obsession in the South. I mean, I was that way growing up. I thought it was, you know, life or death football. And you move out here and, you know, you play the game as hard as you can and you got great passion for the game. And, you know, it's just a little bit more laid back in a way. And it's a lot more like, you know, we're proud of the person, the person you are out there on the field. And like, if you give a great effort and if you try really hard and you know, obviously we're out there to win. Nobody goes out there to lose and look bad in front of a bunch of people. But I think that's the difference, quite frankly, is the what is put into college football in the South and then, you know, how out here football is just the game and, you know, we find the joy in it.
So there is Bo Nix. I hope the guy doesn't get drafted by any New York team. Buffalo, let's see, the Baltimore Ravens, the Philadelphia Eagles, the Dallas Cowboys.
Pittsburgh Steelers.
Let's just roll through these teams.
He needs to go to an L.A. team.
Just because
that's what I hear.
Because you played okay and you tried hard, that's not going to get you the pat on the back. And the SEC and the Big Ten, certainly not in the NFL. Maybe you could say that about being the backup by, you know, helping out the starter who wins on Sundays. But I'm sorry, Chad. I as much as I want to consider, you know, the bigger picture here, if I'm drafting quarterback, I want a cutthroat killer out there. I want somebody that doesn't give a damn what the fans are yelling at him or how passionate the fan base is. I want somebody that welcomes the pressure, that welcomes the scrutiny, and is motivated by it. This guy doesn't seem like he would be. He sounds like he wants to run to Oregon in the Pac-12 instead of stick around and actually go win a Super Bowl.
Yeah, I mean, he sounds like a guy needs to stay on the West Coast. L.A., Arizona, San Francisco probably even has too hard of a fan base for him.
Don't play for the Raiders.
Yeah, the Raiders, no. Yeah, you don't want to be with that fan base. Look, I want to be careful here because I think that Bo Nix plays the game hard. And I'm talking about the difference between soft and hard. I think he plays like a guy who is physical and is tough and hard. That was a very soft answer and soft response to that question, because growing up around it and everything that he knows about football in the South, to act like, hey, also not a very good ringing endorsement for high school players to go play out West. Oh, you want to be there where they really care about it and it's a way of life and people are going to support you and it's going to be loud and raucous, or do you want to come out here where it's just laid back and, hey, man, it's just a game. We go out there and play and have fun and win or lose doesn't really matter. Not a great endorsement for West Coast football, at least to me. And a very soft response from a guy who plays the game pretty tough, from what I've seen.
No, and I the last few years when he was at Auburn, I was high on Bo Nix, right? And again, like, he has the family lineage. He went from that to Oregon, played better, played well, possibly a first-round pick. We'll see. Second round, right? But, Chad, I'm thinking to myself, man, you have a very small group of teams that would fit into that category. That would be the Oregon of the NFL that he's describing. You know, Tennessee, Indianapolis, Jacksonville, Houston, AFC South, right?
Yeah.
Where else? Like Denver?
No. I would go with like the sensibility.
Not with Sean Payton.
Yeah, but I think the sensibility of the Rams and Chargers fit that mold. The Cardinals, you know, way more laid back with their fan bases and their market.
Yes, but a more of a national audience with the screw. Again, Chad, I'm just thinking, man, what's this guy going to be like in 3 or 4 years if he is the starter and he ends up facing that exact scrutiny, but on a much higher and turned up level? I just think to myself, man, it's that's not a quality that I want in the leader of my team.
No.
But he's been a leader. It's just not good for me to put him on the draft board.
I'd
want to play against that guy. I want that guy on the across the sideline from me.
Totally agree. Hutton, can we talk about one of my favorite topics, uniforms?
Yes. Yeah, because we've seen seen some new uniforms in the NFL.
What's old is new, and what's new is old. This is a tale as old as time. We've seen it many times before. The Broncos, they've got some old uniforms that are now new uniforms. We're going to show those to you. If you look on the far right, you'll see just an absolute work of art.
Yep.
Which is the 70s and 80s Denver Broncos orange crush uniforms with that different blue helmet and the orange D with the Bronco shooting through the middle of the D. And lots of jokes there. And John Elway wore that helmet and wore it with pride.
Thank goodness they implemented this throwback helmet now, which came back last year.
Yeah, yeah. Well, look, this is where I want to go with this, all right? I am a child of the 90s. Okay, I love the 90s. The 90s were the worst time in the last 50 years for fashions. This was the time of frosted tips and some pretty crazy clothes that have not aged well right now. This was a time of, here were the following teams that entered professional sports in the 90s, just some of them. The Panthers, the Jags, Teal was in, baby. light blue, big time color in the 90s. If you remember, the Detroit Pistons went from a classic blue and red look to something that was horrific. That was a teal, light blue, yellow type thing that Grant Hill was forced to wear for those late 90s Pistons teams. The Marlins, turquoise. Mm. Turquoise was in. How about purple? Rockies, Raptors coming to the league. Whatever the hell the Vancouver Grizzlies were, they came
whatever
in the league
the hell
also.
They were.
I don't even know what the hell those colors were. All I know about them was Bryant Big Country Reeves did not look good. That was not a flattering color. There's not many flattering colors for Bryant Big Country Reeves back in the day. But whatever that turquoise whatever was not a flattering color for him. 90s were a bad time for fashion trends, for uniform trends. And I'm going to give you a brief history of 90s uniform changes. 1997, the Broncos went from that beautiful uniform, that beautiful ensemble that I just showed you, to what they've worn most of the last two decades, which is the navy blue with orange look. Now, the Broncos won Super Bowls in 97 and 98. I understand sticking with that if you're the Broncos because they switched and immediately started winning Lombardi trophies. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers went from the beautiful creamsicle color orange uniforms to some monstrosity that was pewter. I think their pants were pewter is the color you'd call them back in the day in 1997. The Seahawks went from a beautiful royal blue, silver pant, green, silver helmet and logo to a different color in 2002. Patriots in 93 went away from the old school logo and old school uniform. In 2000, went to more of what you've seen lately. The Eagles went from the Kelly green to a darker green color. In 1996, the Bills changed in 2002. I had a bedspread as a child, and I'm going to show it to you right now, that was green, and maybe some of you had this as well. And it had all the NFL helmets on it.
I wanted this.
In this one helmet, Hutton, the very top of the screen, you can see the old Bucks helmet, the Denver Broncos helmet, the Seattle Seahawks helmet. I'm not one to say that everything that's old was better, but I am here to tell you right now, and that Broncos throwback uniform is an example. If you went back to 1992 and put every NFL team in the uniform they were in 1992 and change all of the unis that I just went through that changed the 90s or early 2000s, bad times for fashion. I know because I lived through it and I wore the clothes. And yes, I had frosted tips in high school also. I'm telling you, the world would be a better place. The NFL would be a better place. It would be a more beautiful place if you went back to these old uniforms. 1992, Hutton. Circle that year. That was the year where uniforms were at their very best across the NFL.
And all the shows appeared older because of the fashion.
Yes. You know,
Golden Girls. The actors, actresses were, what, in their late 50s? And they appeared to be in their 70s
well,
or 80s?
Well, Estelle Getty was, like, the youngest on the cast. And they made her up to be, like, 80 or 90.
But whatever they were wearing made the rest of the cast appear older than what they actually were, even though they weren't, in any prosthetic or anything like that. That was the 90s. Bring back the 90s.
And it was also a time
bring back the
for awful turquoise pastel colors and those schemes were introduced all over the place. That was the hot ticket item of the 90s. Do away with those. Hell, do away with the Panthers and Jags for all I care. Get them out of the NFL too. Let's get a better city in there. Let's get better colors. Let's get better uniforms.
Well,
you know what the NBA did? They got rid of Vancouver. That uniform was so bad they left the town and went to Memphis and had a completely different color scheme, which is far better than what they introduced in the 90s. Get away from all of it. Broncos are the example, and get back to 1992 uniforms.
Bryant Big Country Reeves, by the way, 50 years old, returned to his home state of Oklahoma. He's a cattle farmer, and his son went to Harvard Law School.
That's awesome. I would have assumed he was dead.
Dead or alive.
I really would. When you said his name, I was thinking, oh, please tell me that Bryant Big Country Reeves is alive and with us still. Only 50, too.
50.
That's awesome. 50 years old.
50 years old.
Good for him.
From Arkansas.
Son went to Harvard. I love that guy. I love watching him at Oklahoma State.
Real quick, let's roll through the there's four teams, I believe, with new uniforms, or they have a uniform update. You mentioned Denver. We have those. Here are the New York Jets. They've got the new legacy begins. These are nice.
Yeah, those are nice. They look pretty much the same because the helmet is very similar to the same. to the ones they just had. And I like this. This is another. If you go back to 1992, that's the Jets helmet scheme. Not the late 60s Joe Namath white with the NY on it. Not the ones they've had most recently that are the white helmets. That green helmet look is like the when Boomer Esiason was on the Jets in the 90s look that they had, which I also like better than the alternative.
All right, what do we have next here? Yeah, the Detroit Lions. New unis, a new spin. This is their quote-unquote one pride collection for the Lions.
I can't tell much different about this one. When I see it on the field, I'm sure I'll see a big difference. The Lions are another
one.
Look
at the helmet, though, on the left.
Let's go back to 1992 and Barry Sanders. They should have never messed with that, and they haven't messed with it much.
I kind of like the helmet on the left. Do you?
It still looks pretty similar. I don't like the black uniform. That helmet is cool as an alternative.
I think so, too.
But their main helmet is better.
Yes.
If you're going to go with an alternate helmet, that's a good look. But I will fight for those Lions uniforms any day of the week. I love them. So Honolulu blue.
Here, the Houston Texans. Everyone's raving about the Houston Texans.
I think it's awful.
Red unis. And I think we have them. Red unis with a helmet. Oh, we don't have them. Red unis with a helmet that's also like a
Describe
metallic
them,
red.
I'm
I'll try
close my
to
eyes,
now.
Paint a picture.
But one of their helmets is a dark navy with an H on it. But it's a font that is like old school, like, I don't know, like calligraphy almost with an H. Followed by the dark blue with the red lettering. That's the best one that I've seen. The all red uni, no, I think it's going to look awful. Red highlighter.
I know that John McClain is going to defend these uniforms.
There it is.
I think that thing.
See the H?
That thing is horrific. I hate it. I hate the outline of the light blue on it. I don't like the black. I don't like the H. I hate that red chrome helmet. CBS
the white
Sports did a ranking.
Best one.
The white uni is far and away the best, yes. And the other one looks like the Atlanta Falcons.
It does.
I'm looking at that right now. That looks black to me. Black and red and the Falcons.
That might be a dark navy, though. I can't.
Oh, it's got to be a dark navy, I would think, because if not, it is the Falcons
it's
uniform.
It, yeah, maybe that's just maybe they just put two Falcons players in there by accident.
CBS Sports ranked these new uniforms. They had Houston at number one. I could not disagree more with that ranking. These are the worst of the new uniforms.
You know what?
And it's a distant fourth to me.
The response is on social for this. It means the fact that we hate them, it's going to sell like crazy.
I think you could do any new uniform and it's going to sell like crazy.
But
it doesn't mean they're good. It doesn't mean you should do it.
But I think like the younger audience wants it. Have you seen some of the stuff they sell now? The throwback, what they call throwback is not throwback.
I mean, I could show you some of the stuff I wore in 1997. And I mean, that was what kids were wearing then too. And
it
sucked.
It sold.
And it sucked too.
Bring back carpenter pants, please.
Right. I mean, look, but just because something sells doesn't mean it doesn't suck. That thing sucks. Those uniforms suck. What I wore in the 90s sucked. But my parents bought it for me.
I'll take back the cargo shorts. Let's go.
Yeah.
I'll wear those again. Flannel shirts.
Give me the classic look.
The
puka necklace.
Trench coat.
Huge necklace with the
shell.
Yeah, shark tooth in the middle of it. Like I killed a shark in Panama City.
Has John McClain ever had a shark tooth?
We'll find out.
Necklace. John McClain joins us next week. NFL draft notes, news, and rumors, including the Giants attempting to move up and a report that the Las Vegas Raiders have tried to move up to the second overall selection. We'll tell you why. There's a connection with one of the quarterbacks. It's next here on Hot Mic.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Sixth and Peabody, our location with Yeehaw Beer and Old Smoky Moonshine's Hot Mic with Hunt and Withrow here at outkick.com/watch. You can stream the show live there. You can catch, of course, clips, highlights, and more on YouTube. We'll be streaming live on Thursday night for the NFL Draft Watch Party. That will be in the chat. You can join us there and just subscribe to the channel at Outkick there on YouTube. among other streaming platforms. And you can, of course, listen to the show on the go, podcast available wherever. And speaking of podcasts, Chad, you recently, you brought back trivia. Back in the day, we would have Tuesdays with John McClain at 6 p.m., right?
And then, sounds right.
Or Tuesdays or Wednesday evenings for the 6 p.m. hour. And then in primetime with Chad Withrow. And then we would have
Thursday night trivia.
And you've got a trivia podcast back.
Yeah, I'm really back to my roots. I showed my childhood bedspread today. And now I'm going back to my roots as a trivia game show host with the quiz as part of Fox News Audio. You can take the quiz right now at thequiz.fox. There are different people that host each episode, and I was the host of this episode that just dropped today.
Awesome.
So go to thequiz.fox, and you can hear me asking people some questions. It was a lot of fun. Hutton and really got to embrace my roots as a trivia game show host.
It was one of your favorites.
Yes.
One question, two answer, another big one.
Any trivia.
Any trivia.
Big Jeopardy
whatsoever.
Guy, Trivial Pursuit. Love all of it. Love all of John McClain, too.
Yeah, NFL trivia. We're very good at McClain trivia as well.
Yep.
Stories of his life.
And of his whole life.
John joins us now. John, it's certainly good to see you, man, and glad you're back on with us.
I was thinking just then, one time Chadillac said to me, the show I do at night, we got this local attorney who wrote a book about SEC football. Yeah. He's pretty funny. He'll say anything, and he's getting a lot of attention. I said, what's his name? He said, Clay Travis.
That is very well said, John. Started early 2008.
And the name of
that
show?
Was when Clay was Clay Nation. I was the host, and I would just lob softballs to Clay, and he would say crazy things, and we'd get called into George Plaster's office, and he would yell at Clay. Actually, no, he would yell at me about something Clay said, and I'm like, I can go get Clay and bring him in here. I didn't say it. Fun times, though, for sure, John. And you've been a big part of it all, so we appreciate you.
John, how many quarterbacks are we going to see in the top 15 on Thursday night drafted into the league?
Well, I think we're going to see the top four. I mean, I just don't think Michael Penix is going high in the first round. I don't think Bo Nix is. Although, if you're a team like the Raiders and you pick, 13th, and you like a quarterback like Penix, you can't think we're going to get him in the second round. If you like him, take him. And don't worry about what everybody says, but I think it'll be the top four. Don't know if they'll go four in a row. I'm guessing they won't, because the Cardinals need a wide receiver really bad for Kyler Murray. And whether they end up taking Marvin Harrison Jr., which most of it think they will, or Malik Nabers, or even Roma Dunze, they can't trade down too far and be guaranteed of getting one of them. So I'm getting we're going to have four quarterbacks going in the top five or six.
And the Raiders, you mentioned the Raiders at 13. There's a report that they were calling, trying to move up to the top three, and the report I'm reading specifically says the second overall pick. Washington's going to take a quarterback there. But there is a connection with Jaden Daniels. Antonio Pierce coached at Arizona State. He was there and was part of the recruiting coordinator, I believe, whenever Jaden Daniels was at Arizona State before transferring to LSU. How much do you think there's a legitimate shot at Jaden Daniels if Drake May goes number two and New England is sitting there at number three?
I do a weekly show in Las Vegas that I just got off of, and they say the Raiders are going after him, but they know it will cost them at least three number one picks. Now, you get one back to take the player, so really it's two number one picks, and they throw in something else. And I said, well, here's the deal. Would the Houston Texans trade two number one picks right now for C.J. Stroud? Of course they would. So if you have a guy you like, you have to go get him, because you can fill in everything else in free agency, the draft. You're not going to the Super Bowl with a rookie quarterback. So you have to do it. I see a lot of people saying, well, New England should trade out because the Patriots have so many needs. That's preposterous, unless they don't believe one of the other quarterbacks can take them to the Super Bowl. You have to get the quarterback. It's asinine to think you can wait till next year when that draft's not supposed to be anywhere near like this one, maybe not like the last one, but it doesn't keep teams from trying, but it's going to cost you your number one this year, 2025, and 2026 plus more. But if you love the guy, do it.
John, moving on from quarterback to wide receiver, there's not a lot of bad things being said about the top three. Marvin Harrison Jr., Malik Nabers, Rome Odunze. Not saying they're going to go in that order necessarily, but when you look at the value there with those top three guys at that position, do you see a lot of separation between them? And what do you think the market is going to be for that team that feels like they're a big-time wide receiver away from possibly competing for a Super Bowl? Reports are now, it's the new hot item, is that the Bills would be willing to trade up into the top 10 to draft a Malik Nabers. What is the value there for those top receivers?
Chad, like, it's great if you can get one. You know how many receivers are in the Hall of Fame that didn't go in the first round?
There's a lot. How
many great receivers there were last season that didn't go in the first round? You can get receivers. I look at the Texans. Tank Dell, third round. Nico Collins, third round. They don't have anybody who was a first rounder. And this is a really deep draft for wide receivers. We're going to see good ones 3 years down the line. It came in the second, third, and fourth rounds. And so if you got to have one, if you don't have any, then this is a good year to do it. But if I know somebody wants to take a wide receiver and I can pick up another pick or two, I'm going to trade down, let them have that wide receiver while I get one later.
John, it's a big draft for the Giants, and many have them linked to a quarterback as well. And just go back to your previous answer. If you love the guy, take him. I get it. But the idea that you go draft the quarterback and move up, knowing that it's Daboll's third draft, I believe, there in New York, same as the general manager, and they sit there at the sixth selection. I don't know why you wouldn't get a receiver to pair with Daniel Jones, and it could be Malik Nabers, it could be Rome Odunze, could be, for all we know, Marvin Harrison Jr., depending on how things go. I don't know why you wouldn't lean that way, given the fact that, well, Devin Singletary's there in the backfield. No more Saquon Jones. And, I mean, there's not any Hall of Fame receivers on their roster right now either. They could really do themselves, I think, better by getting a starting caliber wideout to pair with your big money quarterback instead of drafting a potential backup for him.
I think they're going to get the third receiver. If Jim Harbaugh, who has Justin Herbert, why do you want to have a Mercedes, a quarterback, and a bunch of Pintos?
Yeah.
At wide receiver skill positions. Yeah, there's talk about taking Alt. I think we all think he's going to Tennessee. But they've got to get a wide receiver unless they trade out. So that would be the first two are gone. And the thing about Daniel Jones, they didn't draft him. They don't want him. And if they love, say, J.J. McCarthy and he's there, they got to take him because Jones will be gone in another year and there will be other receivers available. But if they don't, then they're going to be in the same predicament next year. And they should take the receiver if they think they can get the quarterback next year, because it's really not fair to watch a quarterback and to grade the quarterback if you haven't put the pieces around him. It's like having a Mercedes body in a Volkswagen engine. Yeah. Is not fair to the quarterback, but I don't see them taking a quarterback. I do see them taking the third receiver.
Okay. John, we see every year the value of offensive tackle. If Joe Alt is this good, players like him don't last to the seventh pick if Joe Alt is Joe Thomas. We see a lot of the tackles lumped together. There's only two of the guys at the top that actually played left tackle. The other ones could be right tackles, I believe. They could have some versatility. Alt's one of the guys that plays on the left side. You're right about the Titans. The Chargers could also go that way. Harbaugh said that they have to address specifically the offensive line, that's priority one. I don't know where he goes. If he goes to seven, I think in a typical draft, he would go in the top five, would he not?
Well, he would if he were there next year.
Yeah.
You're not going to leave all those quarterbacks going at the top. Yes. I was around Joe Alt during the Lombardi festivities here. I hosted a luncheon with all the finalists, and I love the guy. I mean, he looks like a basketball, big. He looks like a big basketball player because he's really closer to 6'9" and 6'8". Of course, comes from a football family. I think you get him, you're going to pay him a lot of money on that second contract, but you're going to get him for 10 years, maybe more. And I don't buy anything that comes out of Jim Harbaugh's mouth. So if Harbaugh's talking about his offensive line, that means he's going to go after a wide receiver.
Vikings, they are supercharged at the skill positions. They have some big names across that offense, except at quarterback. How much can they move around with two first-round picks, John, to get up high enough with all the other teams sitting there? You mentioned the Giants could take J.J. McCarthy at 6. Where do the Vikings need to get to in order to ensure themselves that they get the quarterback that they want?
I think they need to get to the Chargers because I don't think Arizona is going to trade. Then Harbaugh could get his receiver and his offensive tackle because those are two of the deepest and most talented positions in this draft. But there's when it comes to offensive linemen, there's Alt and there's everybody else.
Yeah.
Seven or eight could be taken in the first round, maybe 9. But whoever gets Alt is going to get a guy could become a perennial pro bowler in an all pro selection. So I think that Minnesota, if they can't do it, you know, they can't reach for another quarterback like Penix or the guy from Tulane or Spencer Rattler or one of those guys. They're going to have to trade 2 ones this year and a one next year and something else to put themselves in position to draft a quarterback they like.
So many people are talking about who are the Vikings going to pair at quarterback with Justin Jefferson, and I understand when that's a big talking point. John, am I crazy to think that maybe the most perfect pairing in the top 10 is the New York Jets drafting Brock Bowers for Aaron Rodgers at the end of his career as a pass-catching target for that team?
Boy, I sure hope you're right, because I got a bet of $100 with one of my former co-hosts. I said Bowers would go in the top 10. He said he wouldn't. All the mocks have him going 10 to the Jets. And the bottom line on that, if Rodgers says, I want Bowers, Bowers is going to MetLife Stadium. If he doesn't want Bowers and he wants another position, that's what they're going to do, because Aaron Rodgers basically is still running the Jets, which has to drive the coach Robert Saleh crazy. But if you want to maximize Rodgers coming off that torn Achilles, give him Bowers, who is by far the best tight end prospect and one of the best ever when it comes to being a receiver.
John, isn't it odd that we are talking NFL draft at the top of the draft and we're not talking about the Texans right now?
Well, they unveiled their new uniforms today with a light blue they call H-Town Blue. And sure looks a lot like Columbia Blue to me.
Okay.
So that's a big deal. People are so fired up here because of the team. They traded out of the first round. Nick Caserio has got a bunch of picks next year, 9 picks this year. And I can tell you, I'm doing a mock draft for all the Texans, 9 picks. I write for their website, HoustonTexans.com. And I'm going to have them taking a defensive tackle in the second round, a corner in the second round, and a safety in the third.
You think it's a tackle or a pass rusher that will end up being the first defensive player selected?
I think it's going to be an edge rusher.
Okay.
Everybody has Turner from Alabama going to Atlanta. Atlanta hasn't had a good pass rusher since John Abraham in the early 2000s. They've got to get somebody who can put heat on the quarterback. You know, if, say, Roma Dunze was there or Brock Bowers, and they could have Bowers pissed together, they would be really tempted. But they're desperate, desperate for a pass rusher.
Yes. John, always great to catch up with you, man, and glad that you were able to join us this week.
Thanks very much, guys. I appreciate it, and enjoy the draft.
Yep, same to you.
Thanks, John.
John McClain. We'll check out his mock draft as well. HoustonTexans.com is where you can find his great work. Always great to catch up with him. We have Jim Nagy's coming up in about 15 minutes, 20 minutes or so. Looking forward to chatting with the executive director of the Reese's Senior Bowl. We'll get his take, his view of all of the talent at the top of the draft. When we come back, more headlines. And, Chad, we need to discuss the mock drafts that we turned in. How many trades? I want to know how many trades you had.
Okay.
We won't unveil who we're picking, but I've got craziness. I'll explain straight ahead here on Hot Mic.